What if one organization invented the transistor, the laser, the solar cell, information theory, cellular technology, and satellite communications, all while employing 13 Nobel Prize winners? This wasn't science fiction. For nearly half a century, Bell Telephone Laboratories stood as the most influential research institution in human history, quietly revolutionizing modern life from a suburban New Jersey campus. While most companies chased quarterly profits, Bell Labs played the long game, funding research that wouldn't pay off for decades. The result? They didn't just predict the future. They built it, piece by piece, creating the technological foundation for our digital age. Mervyn Kelly couldn't sit still. Growing up in Gallatin, Missouri, he was the kid who ran when others walked, who built businesses while classmates played, who earned the nickname Our Irish King through sheer force of energy and ambition. He managed paper routes, helped run his father's hardware store, sold fireworks, and repaired bicycles, always moving, always building. This restlessness would eventually reshape the world. Kelly's path led him to the University of Chicago, where he spent countless hours in Robert Millikan's laboratory, measuring microscopic oil droplets to calculate the electron's charge. The painstaking work tested every fiber of his naturally impatient temperament, but it taught him something invaluable. Breakthrough discoveries require both brilliance and persistence. By the mid-1930s, Kelly had risen to director of research at Bell Labs with a revolutionary insight. Breakthroughs emerged from physicists bumping into chemists, theorists collaborating with engineers, and pure scientists engaging with practical problems. He designed Bell Labs' physical spaces to force these encounters, long hallways and shared areas where researchers from different disciplines had to interact daily. In 1937, Kelly visited William Shockley's office with a vision, replacing all mechanical telephone relays with electronic alternatives that had no moving parts, just electricity flowing through solid materials. This conversation planted the seed for the transistor, demonstrating Kelly's ability to see decades ahead. He wasn't solving today's problems, he was identifying the problems that would define tomorrow. This created something remarkable, a laboratory where practical needs drove theoretical breakthroughs. Scientists weren't pursuing abstract knowledge for its own sake. They were solving real problems that happened to require inventing new physics, chemistry, and mathematics. Creating the telephone system meant inventing everything from scratch. Not just phones, but ringers, cables, switchboards, dial tones, busy signals. Even hanging up required invention. Bell researchers called it a problem-rich environment. Every component had to function reliably for 40 years in conditions from desert heat to Arctic cold. A single call required tens of thousands of interrelated elements working in perfect harmony. Chemists devoted careers to developing better cable sheathing. At Bell Labs' Chester facility, engineers buried telephone poles 10 feet deep and monitored their degradation for decades, a process requiring generational patience. Even wildlife became a research problem. Gophers, squirrels, and termites caused hundreds of thousands in annual damage, leading to innovations in protective coverings still used today. By the late 1930s, the system handled 73 million daily calls, the most complex machine ever created. This tension between immediate needs and long-term research created a unique ecosystem where Nobel Prize-winning discoveries emerged from efforts to make phone calls clearer, cheaper, and more reliable. By December 1947, Walter Brattain and John Bardeen created the transistor, a fingertip-sized device replacing room-sized vacuum tubes. Bell Labs management instantly recognized it. This is a basically new thing in the world. The transistor became the fundamental building block of every electronic device, from hearing aids to supercomputers. The team embodied complementary contrasts. William Shockley possessed lightning-quick theoretical brilliance but struggled with collaboration. Brattain was skeptical and hands-on. Bardeen spoke in barely audible whispers, but when he did, everyone listened. Together, they embodied Kelly's vision, brain and hands, theory and practice working seamlessly. Kelly assembled chemists, metallurgists, and circuitry experts who attacked problems from every angle. When Bardeen proposed a theory, Brattain tested it within hours. This rapid iteration became Bell Labs' secret weapon. On June 30, 1948, Bell Labs announced the transistor could do just about everything a vacuum tube can do, only better, cheaper, and more reliably. Claude Shannon's 1948 paper, A Mathematical Theory of Communication, fundamentally redefined information. Shannon proved all communication systems follow the same mathematical patterns. His most revolutionary claim, any digital message could be sent with virtual perfection, even along the noisiest wire, by including error-correcting codes. This paradox, that adding extra information could lead to clearer communication, left engineers astonished. Today, every cell phone call and Wi-Fi connection builds upon Shannon's principle. John Pierce called himself an instigator, someone whose restless mind sparked ideas in others. In 1954, he outlined how communication satellites could relay signals across oceans, calculating their viability where underwater cables were expensive and limited. On August 12, 1960, NASA launched ECHO, a passive satellite that reflected signals between points on Earth. President Eisenhower's recorded message traveled from California, bounced off ECHO, and arrived in New Jersey so clearly that listeners didn't realize it had crossed the continent. Within a year, satellites evolved from experimental curiosities to serious business opportunities. Pierce possessed prescient vision about communications convergence. When Walter Cronkite asked about a central home communications panel, Pierce emphasized that communication is a general function. The same transmission facilities could interchangeably carry telephony, television, and data. He saw what most couldn't. All electronic communication would eventually merge into a single, unified system. In December 1947, the same month the transistor was perfected, two Bell Labs engineers wrote a memo outlining cellular technology. Doug Ring and Ray Young proposed replacing single, high-powered antennas with networks of low-powered ones arranged in hexagonal cells, with different frequencies reused in non-adjacent cells for dramatically increased capacity. They had invented cellular communication decades before the technology existed to implement it. The frustrating part? The FCC awarded the necessary radio frequencies to UHF television instead, delaying mobile phones by 20 years. In 1968, the FCC invited Bell System to propose communication channel uses. Joel Engel, Dick Frankiel, and Phil Porter gathered at Holmdel, drawing hexagons on blackboards, envisioning mobile phones as business tools, not pocket devices for everyone. The engineers who made cellular real came from Bell Labs' Whippany office with military backgrounds. They built mobile radios that automatically changed frequency as drivers moved between cells, testing equipment in a modified trailer home while driving through Philadelphia neighborhoods at night. The work was unglamorous, technical, and essential. In December 1971, 24 years after Ring and Young's original memo, AT&T submitted its cellular proposal to the FCC. This timeline reveals something crucial. Breakthrough ideas often arrive decades before the technology exists to implement them. The cellular concept was brilliant in 1947, but required transistors, integrated circuits, electronic switching stations, and programmable computers before becoming reality. Sometimes, the hardest part of innovation isn't having the idea, it's having the patience to wait for the rest of the world to catch up. Bell Labs dissolved gradually after AT&T's 1982 breakup, ending the monopoly funding that enabled decades of transformational research. Today's tech giants, Apple, Google, Microsoft, Facebook, possess similar advantages: near monopoly status, enormous resources, brilliant engineers in creative campuses. Yet crucial differences remain. This was a company that literally dumped technology on our country, notes physics historian Michael Riordan. I don't think we'll see an organization with that kind of record ever again. Modern tech companies answer to international capital markets demanding quarterly growth, not regulators. They're unlikely to invest heavily in basic research and freely share results. John Pierce identified Bell Labs' key elements: technically competent management to the top, researchers freed from fundraising, multi-year support without demanding immediate results, and the ability to terminate projects without damning researchers. Add steady funding from phone bills, interdisciplinary staff, and what Maury Tannenbaum called circumscribed freedom, broad latitude within a directed mission. Bell Labs proved innovation isn't just about competition and profit. The most transformative advances, transistors, information theory, lasers, cellular technology, emerged from valuing long-term thinking over short-term gains. We live in a world built on Bell Labs' innovations, yet have abandoned the institutional model that made them possible. The question isn't whether we can recreate Bell Labs, we probably can't. It's whether we can create new institutions embodying its essential principles: patience, interdisciplinary collaboration, and courage to invest in ideas that won't pay off for decades.